Tonight's shiur, it's no parshas Shavua this week, so it'll be a shiur on Sukkos. Gemara says in Tainis, Daf Kaftal Adam Abbeis, Leitzos Maisu with Rava. Rava was once gozer, decreed a punishment of Malkus on a Yid, because he lived with Goya, Kusis. And because of the Malkus, the flagellation, he was killed. It was too much for the guy, and he ended up dying. So word got out to the king that this person died because of Rava. So he wanted to punish Rava severely for what he did, for killing this person directly. So the mother of the king said to the king, said, listen, I wouldn't mess with the Jews. Because whatever they ask for, their God listens. You know, they need rain, they daven for rain, and Hashem brings the rain. And so I wouldn't mess with the Jews, I'm warning you. So the king said to his mother, with all due respect, mother dear, they daven for rain, but you are very simple. They daven for rain in the winter, so anyway, it's probably going to rain. Let's see if they can daven for rain in the summer, and then it's going to rain. So Rava heard this. He davened for rain in the summer, and it started to rain miraculously. That night, Rava went to sleep, and his father came to him in a dream, and he said, listen, you bothered Hashem, kviyachol, you know, to make it rain not in its right time. So as a result, there's a din against you. And if you want to be saved from the din, you have to mishana makom. Mishana makom, mishana mazel. So I strongly suggest that you change your place. So he woke up from the dream. He listened. He changed his bed to another bed. And then when he woke up that morning, he saw that the first bed was full of knife jabs. Like it was totally destroyed by a knife. Can you read from a shadim, from some demons, came and they, you know, so had he stayed in the first place, that would have been the end of him. That's the Gemara. Rav Shlomo Kluger says, so too, it's a remez to our matzav right now. Seiros Yemei Teshuva went by, started from Elul, but more specifically, Seiros Yemei Teshuva, where we bothered, so to speak, v'yachal Hashem, with our tefillahs. Hashem, give us this, give us that. And even though we're not maybe deserving it so much, but Hashem, okay, so you know what, I'll give it to you anyways. So we bothered Hashem with our tefillahs. We see from the Gemara over here that that's not such a pashuta thing. When Hashem has to do miracles because of our tefillahs, it can cause a din against us. So what's the solution? Mishana makom, like Rava did. And that's why we go out in the sukkah at this time, to right after Seiros Yemei Teshuva, to mishana the makom, mishana the mazel, after we, so to speak, bothered Hashem with our tefillahs. So Rav Shlomo Kluger once wanted to say that perhaps this is another answer to one of the most famous questions in Yiddishkeit, and that is, why is Sukkot celebrated in Chodesh Tishrei and not in Chodesh Nisan? This, the whole idea is the Sukkot that we were in the Midbar, we were dwelling in the Sukkot. When did we go in the Midbar? Pesach, we left Egypt, we were out in the Midbar. So why are we celebrating Sukkot in Tishrei? Going to this is very good, because it's Tafkis. Hashem wants us to celebrate in Tishrei after Seiros Yemei Teshuva, since we bothered him, so we should be Mishanar Ar Makom, Mishanar Ar Mazel. The Midrash Pliya, Pella is because it's not the Pashat understanding that we're used to. The Midrash says, Midrash Rabbah, Breishis Rabbah, says on the pasuk Vayhi erev Vayvoker Yom Echad, Midrash says Ze Yom Kippur. Very strange, because it comes out that the Vayhi erev Vayvoker Yom Echad means the first day of creation was when Yom Kippur, which is Yud Tishrei. So of course we're not used to that. We're used to Kaf Hei Elul, whatever was the first day of creation, and man was created on the first day of Tishrei, you know, the Rosh Hashanah. But going to this Midrash, different shot in the Midrash. Midrash says that the world, the first day of creation was on Yom Kippur. So the Pardes Yosef says a very nice thing. He says, if the first day of creation was Yom Kippur, so when was Adam HaRishon created? On sixth day of creation, which is Tesvav Tishrei. Tesvav Tishrei is Sukkos. So it comes out, according to this midrash at least, that Adam HaRishon was created on first day of Sukkos. And what happened on that first day that he was created? He also sinned. What did he sin with? He ate from the Eitz HaDa'as. In fact, one opinion says that is the it was an Esrog. Was the Eitz HaDa'as was an Esrog. So it comes out that the Tesvav Tishrei was the day that Adam was created, the day that he sinned. What did he do? He ate from the Esrog. So what's the tikkun for us? L'chachtem lachem b'yom harishon pri Eitz Hadar. So we take the Esrog as a kapara for the Chet HaRishon, which happened on Tesvav Tishrei. Which also can understand the Chazal, which says that L'chachtem lachem b'yom harishon, Chazal say Rishon l'cheshbon avonos. That the first day of Sukkot is the first day of the Cheshbon Avonos. Not a simple pshat is that we don't sin after Yom Kippur. We're so busy with Sukkot, and then so the first time we get around to sinning again, Rishon LaCheshbon Avonos is Sukkot. For simple pshat. But according to this, no, it's the Rishon LaCheshbon Avonos because that's when the first oven was. The Rishon LaCheshbon Avonos was the first day of Tishrei was when Adam Rishon ate and sinned the first time. Okay. Yalkadar Gershuni says, "Lachach lachem b'yom rishon pre-eitz hadar." So the Chazal tell us one idea in pre-eitz hadar is pashup shad. It's a beautiful fruit, but Chazal darshin lashon dar to live. That the it's a hint to the type of fruit that we're supposed to take. It's a fruit that's dar be'ilan mishana lashana. Very strange, right? Most fruit. Apple, whatever, right? It blossoms in the season. Then it grows. You have your apple, and if you either pick it or if you don't pick it, it falls down. That's the end of that. Esrog is very strange that it stays on. It can stay on the tree years and years and years. That's why you can have a huge, huge esrog, right? You can have huge because they don't. They can stay on the tree for years, okay, until you pick it. So that's the hint that the Torah is telling you to take a pre-eitz hadar that's darbi ilan mishan lashan that stays on the tree. Yalkut Gishuni says a nice remez that it's a remez to the Yidden as opposed to the Goyim, right? The Goyim, you know what happens when things are going good, when everything's fine, when they're protected, which is your fruit is protected by the leaves, etc. They guard it from the sun, gives it shade or whatever. So then everything's fine. But as soon as they have no leaves or whatever, then your average fruit, it can't handle it. It would get dried up and fall off or whatever. But an esrog, we said, is not like that. An esrog, the leaves fall off, but the fruit stays. It can be in the sun, it can be in the rain, it stays the whole time, under all conditions. So that's a yid. Right? A yid, not only when things are good, but even when things are not so good, when they're hester panim, when there's no leaves, there's no protection from a Kodesh Baruch Hu that we can see, when it's hester panim, still, we're hanging in there. We're still attached to the tree. We're still attached to Kodesh Baruch Hu. Tamed veikim, Hashem alokeichim, chayim kulchem. Famous Gemara in the beginning of Avodah Zarah, which many drushes of Chag HaSukkos bring this Gemara. Gemara relates how in the future Kodesh Baruch Hu is going to take a Sefer Torah, Kiviyachol, and he's going to say, whoever was Osek in Torah, come and get your reward. So the Goyim are going to come. I want to bring it a little bit to our, not our present day, but up to date a little bit. For example, Thomas Edison, right? He's going to come to Kodesh Baruch Hu and says, Kodesh Baruch Hu, I invented the light bulb. You know how many hours of Torah learning were increased because of the light bulb? I mean, people can sit and all night and learn. Look, because of me, I deserve schar. Another example, the Wright brothers created the airplane. So what are they going to say, the Wright brothers? They're going to say, Aaron Cutler, that's all. He flew from Lakewood to Yerushalayim to Shiva Eitz Chaim. He used to give a shiur every now and then, Eitz Chaim in Yerushalayim. How did he get here? Plane. Because of us. Shiurim, Shiurei Torah. Because of us. Alexander Graham Bell. What did he create? The telephone. Right? What is he going to say? So there's a joke goes around that he said in, years ago, he used to say that a Rav in America, he only has to know one thing in order to Paskin Shilas. What's that? Rav Moshe's telephone number. That's it. You know, you get a Shila, Rav Moshe, help. You know, you pick up the phone, ah, look at all this. Shila's answered because of the cell phone. Telephone. So what is the Kodesh Baruch going to answer them? Shoytim. He said, you bunch of fools. He said, what are you? You what? You created the light, Edison, so people can learn Torah. You created the phone. People, nah, you did it for your own purposes, your own covenant or whatever. And the Gemara continues and says that, okay, why didn't we, you know, keep the Torah? They're going, we're going to say, because you didn't force us. Like you forced the Yidden, you know, Kafalem Hargigigas, you didn't force us. So Kodesh Baruch is going to say, okay, fine. Here, we'll give you a litmus test. We'll give you a test. I'll give you a mitzvah kala. What's that? Sukkah, and see what happens. So the Gemara says they built their sukkahs on the Rosh Hagag. They went to their rooftops, built their sukkah. Shem brought out the sun. Too hot, they left. And the Gemara asked, aye, but they were allowed to leave because it's Tzara Pater. But then the Gemara said, yeah, but they left and they kicked their sukkah when they left. Where's the Yid? Okay, he has to leave. He leaves with a heavy heart. He doesn't go turn around and kick his sukkah down. Oh, yeah, that's the Gemara. So, lots to talk about, but it's one little nakuda over here. They ask, why Dafka, did the Goyim, when they had this mitzvah to do, did they make their sukkah on top of their roofs? Right? Dafka and a Rosh Hagag. Why? It's one idea I saw from Levinstein. It's based on a Maisa with Rav Chaim Zlotus from Lita. And he was... Once there was a Moshel, he was like the mayor of his area. He used to brag about him. He said, you know, I have a Jew, big, big holy man, you know. And one day he was bragging to another mayor from another town. And the second mayor said, I can't believe you think he's a big tzaddik. He goes, here, come, let me show you. So they went to Rav Chaim's house, and they knock on the door. There's no answer. Knock, 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 no answer. I said, that's strange, he's usually home at this time. So they're walking around the side of the house, looking through the window, peeking through, and they see that he was standing still like a rock, and his face against the wall. Okay. So a few minutes later, he comes to the door, opens, says, oh, here, please come in. He says, oh, came in. They said, what were you doing? We noticed you're standing there. So he says, well, I was praying to God. I was dubbing. So, his mayor said, yeah, you see, he's a big, big tzaddik, big, you know, he stands davening, prays, you know. So the other says, I don't believe it. That's not called davening. He says, what do you mean? He says, I have Jews in my area also, the second mayor said. And he said, that's not how you daven, you shuckle. You know, you go back and forth at that. You don't stand there like a rock, you know, facing the wall. He said, that's not how you, that's called davening. That's not called davening. So his mayor said to him, oh, he's got a point there. How come, in fact, why are you standing like a rock? Why don't you move like other Jews? So he said, let me give you the following analogy. He says, there was once a king, and he wanted to have a safe built for his coins, his gold coins. So he hired a special mehandes, engineer, to engineer this safe. Fine, so he engineered it, and he came to the king and says, King, I just want to let you know this is a very special safe. He says, yeah, what's special about it? Special about it is because it holds exactly 1,000 gold coins. Exactly one, not one less, not one more. Exactly 1,000. He says, really? He says, exactly? He says, yeah. In fact, that's how, you know, how he constructed it. In fact, if you test it and it's not the case, you don't have to pay me for my work. So he said, oh yeah, bring the coins. So they brought the coins. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. They fill it up. They go, 997, 998, 999. They couldn't get the last coin. They're like forcing it, pushing it. No, wouldn't go in. So they said, I don't know if you're going to get paid here. He says, no, It's got to work. I know it holds it on. Because look, we tried. You counted with us. It's only 999. He goes, wait a minute. Empty out the safe. So he opened it up, empty it out. He sticks his head in. He goes, ah! An old thing of dust comes flying out. He goes, okay, now try again. So he put it in, 997, 999, 1,000. Right? The dirt. It's the dirt. He says, so too. He says, our rabbis tell us, what's a voda sheva tefila? What's a voda sheva lev? Excuse me. That's tefila. He says when your heart is 100% pure, when there's no other things, then it's all in the heart. But when there's a little schmutz, a little dirt in the heart, so then what happens? It comes out to the surface. It's not all inside. It comes to the surface. Therefore, those people that are not 100% pure in their heart, so they, all these actions, shuckling and moving, somebody who's totally pure, it's all quiet, it's in their heart, it's all there. Nothing has to come to the surface. It's a nice remiss to this. Those of you who dove in Nusach Svard, right, in the Shabbos morning, that we have Befi Yesharim, Siv Seit Sadikim, Vilshon Chasidim, Vakerav Kadoshim. A different lashon in the Nusach Svard. So we see from here different gradations. Befi, fi is the mouth. Those are the yasharim. Those are the people that are yashar. So they are a little bit chitzoiniyistic. It comes out, like we said. They're not 100% pure. So if it's befi, the mouth. The mouth is chitzoinius. Then sif say tzadik. Tzadik's a bigger. Is it tzadik? And that's sif say tzadikim. That's the lips. Lip service is more, is not the mouth. It's a little bit more more internal. Then bilshon chasidim, your tongue, that's even more internal, and that's the chasidim. And finally, the karev kadoshim, the holy, that's karev, that's in the inside. Somebody who's totally pure, he's a kadosh. So mele, say that's why the goyim, they want to do a mitzvah, but say they don't do a mitzvah, but barosh hagag. Why? Let everybody see I'm doing the mitzvah. Why? Because they have dirt inside. It has to come out. It can't be totally internal. It has to be chitzoinistic. I'm going to show everybody how I'm doing the mitzvah and how I go to the Russian guy so everybody can look at me. That's why the goyim do it. It's a very beautiful story I saw once in Sipur LeShabbat from Rabbi Yair Weinstock. It says there was once a yid, an older yid, he used to live in Yerushalayim, and he was forced, because of financial reasons, whatever, marrying off his kids, he had to move to America. He was living in Brooklyn. So, the first year, when this goes back like 35 years ago or so, he was, he took his time, was coming closer, and he was staying by his son, his daughter, and son-in-law. So, came close to Sukkot. He approached his son-in-law, he says, he knew me a favor. I don't know where to buy an Arba meeting here. You know, I want to get an Eserg, whatever, but I don't know where to go. You know, you're from here. Maybe you can help me. He says, sure, no problem. I'll take you. Arba, you know. Fine. So the son-in-law takes him to one of the best stores in Brooklyn for buying your Eserogim. And he goes to the merchant, and he says, I'd like to buy an Eserog. He goes, okay, what type do you want? You know, it's all types of gradations, you know. So he shows him around. He goes, no. He says, I want the top of the line. He says, how much is the top of the line? He says, the top of the line Esrog is $100. It's the Esrog, $100. He says, no problem, just show me your best Esrog. Fine, so he takes out his top of the line Esrog, shows it to the, so he looks at it, he goes, psh, no problem. And he pulls out $100, pays him. So the son-in-law's like, wow. He says, I didn't know my father-in-law was so rich. You know, $100 in Esrog. He couldn't believe it. Fine. So he puts it, he wraps it up for him and puts it away. Fine. So then he says, wait a second. Now I'd like another Esrog, please. He says, another Esrog? He says, yeah. He says, where are your simple Esrog? Kosher, but simple. He says, simple? Over here. How much are they? He says, $1. He goes, can you wrap me up one? He goes, okay. And so son-in-law is like, what? He buys $100 Esrog, and then he has to pay, he buys a $1 Esrog. Like, what's pshat? Couldn't understand it. Huh. Takes it home. He didn't ask him, he didn't say anything. Comes for the morning of Sukkot. So there, he was sleeping, you know, in the Sukkot with his son-in-law and his father, and the father-in-law. And the son-in-law was like, couldn't wait to see, you know, how the father was going to, you know, do the mitzvah of first time or meet him, you know. So sure enough, he saw before it was even light outside, his father-in-law left the sukkah, he went to the mikveh, comes back, and he's all, you know, with tremendous yislavas, and he goes to, picks up the darav and meet him, and the fancy esrog, $100 esrog, and he takes it with tremendous, you know, excitement, and says the bracha, the first bracha, and the shechianu, and he shakes it, and the son-in-law is watching this whole time, and he says, wow. Anyways, he puts it down, and that was that. So then it came time to, you know, to go to shul soon. So the son-in-law, till then he was pretending to be sleeping. Now he, you know, woke up, you know, and ready to go to shul. So he's about to go to shul, and he told his father-in-law, "Is he ready?" And he says, "Yeah, yeah, I'm coming. Let me just get my arba minim to go to shul." He takes his lulav, and then he goes and he takes his $1 esrog. So then the son-in-law understood. He says, when it came to his own mitzvah, I want to do the mitzvah. I wanted to do it, like we said, quietly, pnimius, no schmutz there. So he does it with the $100 esrog. Because I don't want to take the $100 esrog to shul, and everybody's going to say, look at that $100, look at his esrog. No, comes to shul, I'm going to take the $1 esrog. Nobody has to see my mitzvah. Mitzvahs are for me, I don't have to show off. I like the goyim who do the sukkah rosh hagag. Gabe, the Indian of Sukkah Barosh Agag, I saw the following Maisa. In America, there was a Yid that was Chozer B'tshuva. And he was living in an apartment building with 22 stories, like a big, big, big apartment building. And came time for sukkahs, and he wanted to make a sukkah. But he didn't know where he was going to make a sukkah. There's no room in the downstairs, and you know, there's no balcony that doesn't have another balcony over it or whatever. So he had an idea. He said, I know, I'll make the sukkah barosh hagag, the Gemara, and I'll make it on the roof. That's the only thing, there's nothing over me there. And so he thought it was an ingenious idea. So he goes to the landlord, the owner of the building, and he says, you know, not to make it official, he says, listen, I'd like to know if I can use the roof for 1 week. Just 1 week, you know. He says, 1 week? What are you doing? So he says, well, I'm a Jew, a religious Jew, and we have this holiday, we make a booth or whatever, and I want to make it on the roof, but just for 1 week, I'll take it down, that's all. Is that okay? So the goy, landlord goy, he says, not so fast. What do you think? He's going to use the roof like that? He got to use the roof like that. If you want to use the roof, you have to do this officially. Officially, what do you mean? First of all, you don't think you're going to get it for free, do you? You have to pay. You have to pay rent to rent the roof for the week. He says, I have to pay you rent, and nobody's up there anyway. Listen, you want it, and you have to pay for it. So he asked how much it was. He thought, oh, it's a little bit steep, you know, price, but okay for the mitzvah, you know. He says, okay, fine. He's about to take out the money. He goes, no, not so fast. He goes, what? What are you, just to give me the money? No. We have to do this officially. We have to have a lawyer sign a contract, you know, properly, you know. We have to do this right. The lawyer. I said, the lawyer? I just want the roof for a week to put my booth up there. What do you... I said, listen, you want it? So he didn't know what to do. Yes, no. So he thought to himself, no. Okay, fine. Let's go for it. So it was on the 13th of Tishrei, you know, and they got a lawyer and official, whole thing written up, you know, rent the roof for a week, whole thing. Fine, it was agreed. And he pays him the money, finished. He goes, okay, the roof's yours for a week. He goes, okay, Baruch Hashem, finally. So he goes up to the roof, and he opens the door of the roof, and he couldn't believe what he saw. He couldn't believe what he saw. The place was an absolute mess. It looked like everybody from all the 22 floors, everybody had any junk they didn't want to, you know, throw in the garbage. They threw it onto the roof. The place was a mess. There was not a square foot where you could put the sukkah down. It was a mess. So now he thought, listen, maybe this is it. You know, it's a sign that I did what I, you know, what I wanted to do, and I tried, and onus racham on a patre, I guess I don't have to make a sukkah. So then he thought, maybe it's his Yetzer Hara talking to him, and he says, you know what, fine, I'll clean it. So lifts up his sleeves and starts working like a madman, you know, doesn't have too much time, you know, clearing the place. All of a sudden, he sees a white bag. Very strange, like it didn't fit into the surroundings there. He says, that's strange. Picks up the white bag, and something's in it. He opens it up. What does he see? A bag full of diamonds. Full of diamonds. Couldn't believe it. He's, till this day, he didn't know why he did such a thing. But what did he do with it? He went to the police. He went to the police station. He says, lost and found. He says, I found this this bag of diamonds. So the police thought he was nuts. You know, who turns in a bag of diamonds that he found? But okay, Baruch Hashem, he's a Yid, Kiddush Hashem. Anyways, but he gave it to the policeman. Here, I found a bag of diamonds. Okay, took his details, whatever, and that was the end of that. Went back, cleared the place, built his sukkah, and had a sukkah on the roof, and that was the end of that. Indian forgotten. What happens? A few weeks later, he gets called into the police station. Police officer says, listen, you brought in this bag of diamonds, didn't you not? He says, yeah. He says, well, we found out the story behind the bag of diamonds. This belonged to a diamond polisher. He had these diamonds, and they were stolen from him. And it looks like the thieves, they want to hide it or whatever, and they put it on the roof. You found it. So they really belong to the diamond polisher. You know, they're his diamonds. But he just recently died. So the law says that since he didn't have any inheritors, as it was, so he says, it's all yours. So he said, I couldn't believe it, right? So he took his bag, and I said, wealthy man, right? He's so happy, but it didn't last too long. Why? His landlord got word of it. He says, he comes to me, I heard that you found these bag of diamonds, and he goes, that's right. He goes, excuse me, it's not yours, it's mine. He goes, what, yours? He goes, yeah, it's on my roof. It's my building, so this belongs to me. I want them. He says, no, I found them, back and forth. He says, if you don't give it to me, I'm taking you to court. So take me to court. Takes him to court. Goes in court, goes in front of the judge, hear the whole case, back and forth. Finally, the judge gives his psak din, turns to the landlord and he says, you should be ashamed of yourself. He says, what? He says, listen, this guy, you know, who found it, he was up on the roof. Why was he up on the roof? Because he rented the roof from you. Well, he rented the roof from him. You were crazy enough that you had to have a lawyer sign a whole contract, and he did. So this, he rented the roof. The roof includes anything he finds on the roof. It's his. Since he did it, he paid for it. He signed an official contract with a lawyer. That made it his. You did it. You put your foot in your mouth. You know, so that's it. He says, business is business, the judge told him. You know, you did a business deal, that's it. So now you lose. See from here that the person doesn't lose from keeping mitzvahs. The same topic, share with you another little story, same topic. So once a businessman, also in America, and a wealthy businessman, and he was not from, but he decided to start going to Shiurei Torah. So he went to a shiur on Choshen Mishpat, business laws. So he's sitting in the shiur, and all of a sudden the Rav, who's giving the shiur, says that a person is not allowed to cheat his fellow man, but not only his fellow Yid, even if a goy, not allowed to cheat a goy, business. So he got all worried, and he approaches the Rav, and he says, Rabbi, I got a big problem. He says, what? He says, you're saying you're not allowed to cheat a goy. He says, that's right. He says, well, I got a big problem on my hands. He says, what's your problem? He says, listen, there was this huge building complex which I recently purchased because I wanted to open up a whole shopping center there, you know, a big business deal. Anyways, after I bought it, I found out that I was tricked, basically, that the foundations of the building, where there were cracks in the foundations, and the whole building's going to come tumbling down any time in the future. And I got ripped off, so I didn't know what to do. So I decided, well, I'll do what others did to me. I'll just do back to them. So I put it up for sale, the building, And this company of goyim, they approached me and they looked into whatever, and they agreed to buy it, they want to sign it. Now I know that what's in this building, but if I don't sell it, he says, that's the end of me, right? Because the old buildings, it means it's gonna collapse and I lose everything and then go bankrupt. It's gonna ruin me. But on the other hand, if I sell it to this goy, stop without telling them to these goyim, you told me I'm allowed to do it, so what should I do? So the rabbi told him, he said, listen, he says, who do you think's in control over here? The Kodesh Baruch Hu's in control. What's going to be? I'm going to go bankrupt, what's going to be the end of me? No, you just have to do what the Shulchan Aruch says. Kodesh Baruch Hu will take care. As we said before, you don't lose from doing mitzvahs. Follow Shulchan Aruch, everything will be okay. So it was a big, big Nisayan, but he says, okay, I'm going to do it. So he calls a meeting with the company, the goyim that he had agreed to sell the building to. He says, I'd like to meet with you. Fine, so he sits down. And he says, listen, takes a deep breath. I got to tell you something. He says, what? Well, the building you'd agreed to buy from me? The truth of the matter is, it's not a safe building. There's cracks in the foundations, and the whole thing's liable to collapse any day. I just want to be honest with you. That's the story, and what can I tell you? So the goyim listen. They said, just a second, we'd like to discuss the matter amongst ourselves. So they go to the other room. 5-10 minutes later, they came back. They said, nothing doing. He says, we know you Jews, right? You got a Jewish head. You found another buyer who's going to pay you more money. So instead of, it's got cracks in the foundation. No, right now we want to sign. Right now, not right on the spot, we're going to sign. No, none of this business you found. Okay, I told you. So he signs it, they buy it, and sure enough, the whole thing collapsed in the future. So don't lose that by doing mitzvahs. I saw this story, reminded me, on a much lesser scale perhaps, but my father-in-law, Shlita, I remember after I was married, I'm almost the same idea, again, on a smaller scale, but it was almost the same story. He had this car that he wanted, that was giving him trouble, engine was leaking and this and whatever. And so he put it up for sale. Some goy, came to look at the car, drove it around, seemed okay, drove nice, whatever. So the goy says, fine, I'd like to buy it. So my father said, fine, so we'll come tomorrow, whatever, we'll close. So then my father-in-law had the guilty conscience, he didn't feel right. He said, I should have told him there's a leaky problem with the engine, this and that. And he couldn't. He's a very sweet and honest guy, and he couldn't. So he says, I have to call the guy and tell him. So he calls the guy up and he says, listen, so and so, you want to come tomorrow to finish close the deal on my car, and I just gotta tell you that there's problems with the car, there's leaky engine and this and that, and you're only gonna have problems. So the guy said, nothing doing. I know. You found another buyer. You promised me the car. You have to sell it to me. Don't give me these stories about the problem with the engine. Okay. Ended up selling. Okay. It's like to end with one last word. It's a beautiful, beautiful idea on Sukkos. There's a few questions over here. Chazal tell us a very strange halach when it comes to sukkah. Halach we don't find by any other mitzvah. What is that? That a mitztayer is pater from sukkah. It's very, very strange. Right? Do we know any mitzvah that if it's hard, if it's difficult, you don't have to do it? It's uncomfortable you to get for davening. Okay, if it's not comfortable, you don't have to get up to daven. Who ever heard of such a thing? Any mitzvah. You're sick. Right? You're sick. It's hard for you to eat matzah. You have to eat matzah. Pikuach nefesh, different story. Anything that's less than pikuach nefesh, you have to do it. It's hard. Lefum tzara agra. When the only mitzvah that we find, the chora, in anywhere, this taryag mitzvahs, that if it's uncomfortable, pater. Not only that, if you do it anyways, you're considered a fool. You're a hedyot. You're a fool if you do it. Very strange. One question. Secondly, more difficult. we're told that what's the inyan of sukkah? One of the main inyanim of sukkah is galus. Right? That we leave our homes, which are our dearest keva, and we go out into this hut, which is like a form of exile. We're exiled from our homes, and we go into the sukkah. And this is supposed to be a kapara, that in case, you know, we had a din over Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur, that we had to deserve galus for, by us going into the sukkah. So that's our galus. Okay, sounds good. However, then how does that shtim, how does that fit in with what we just said before? If the whole idea of going out in the sukkah is, okay, galus, you know, feel the galus, and it's a kshira kapara, so why if somebody is uncomfortable, why should he be pater? Lehefech! The more uncomfortable you are, the better. That's the more galus. Let you feel galus, the more you feel galus, the better. What's pshat? Uncomfortable, you're pater, like we said. Why? Is this galus? Should be the opposite. The more uncomfortable you are, the better it should be. What's more difficult, which creates even a greater stira, is that we are told that not only, okay, if you're uncomfortable, you're putter, but you're supposed to make the sukkah beautiful. You're supposed to adorn it. You're supposed to take out your finest, you know, fine china and your goblets. You're not allowed to take in your pots. And so you have to, it has to be like, ah, gewaltig. So what's going on? It's a stira. Right? Is sukkah supposed to be like gullus and go out and a kapar? Or is sukkah supposed to be a beautiful, nice, and it's man simchaseinu, right? This is the ikra of sukkah, it's simcha, right? We go out into the sukkah and how does that wouldn't simcha, isn't simcha more being in your nice, comfortable, air-conditioned dining room? That this is simcha? Go out into the sukkah, that whole thing is this, it's a bunch of steers. So the Be'er Yosef says a beautiful vor. Very simple, it answers everything. He says, Chazal tells us, why do we sit in the sukkah? So it's to remind us of Bnei Yisrael, that they left Egypt, they went out to the desert, and they sat in sukkahs. Others say it's a remembrance of the Ananei HaKavod. Now he says, beautiful. So the Ananei HaKavod, okay, here they were out in the desert. Did they suffer out there? No. What happened out in the desert? The Ananei HaKavod protected them. They protected them from the heat. It protected them from the difficult weather conditions. It protected them, not only protected them, the Ananei HaKavod even washed their clothes, dried them, ironed them, right? They had like a car wash for their clothing, you know, walk through car wash, right? The Ananei HaKavod took care. It was unbelievable. Not only that, that's the Ananei HaKavod, but besides that, they also had the man, they had the be'er, the man, anything they wanted to taste, they ate, they had the be'er, a mirror, and the fresh water, wherever they went. They were living in Gan Eden, in exile, in the desert, right? They left Egypt, and they were in Galus, they were in the desert. But it was like Gan Eden there. Mamela said, what are we doing on Sukkot? We're trying to remember what happened to Bnei Israel. So on the one hand, yeah, go out into the sukkah, go out into galus, like Klal Yisrael did, but you have to enjoy, you have to be happy, you have to be, you know, besimcha, you have to have nice dishes, nice things, you can't be mitzdayer. Why? Because you have to be like Klal Yisrael. They were in the desert, but they enjoyed themselves. It was very pleasant there. It was Gan Eden in the desert. So therefore, we have to be kilu in the desert, but enjoy it, be happy, feel good, be in Gan Eden in the desert. Mele, it's clear why mitzdayer is pater over here, right? Because if somebody is not mitzdayer, he's missing the whole point. The whole point of the sukkah is to remember the Ananei HaKavod, etc. of Klal Yisrael's feelings in the midbar of Gan Eden. Therefore, mitzdayer is pater, and somebody who stays there anywhere is a hedger because he's missing the whole point of sukkahs. Rizoyche, all of us to reach the pinnacle of Simcha and Zman Simchaseinu, and be all Yizoyche to a good Kvittel, and see the coming of Mashiach Tzikenu this year, the Karbi Menu Mamash.